and welcome to the Clever Text podcast, Creating Useful People. I'm Jodie Cook, and today's episode is a little bit different because we are going to do a season's recap of the whole of season one. And for this episode, I am joined by my husband, Ben Cook.
Hello.
It's going to be Ben's role to keep this session on track, but also help us to bring out some of the themes within each of the podcast guests.
Yeah, sure. So the first thing we're going to do is start with a recap of all of the 17 fantastic guests we had in the series. And then we're going to dig a little bit deeper and pull out the six trends that we've identified amongst them.
First up, we had Craig Donaldson, the former CEO of Metro Bank. Then it was Jessica Wheeler, the principal of Elmhurst Ballet School. Next was Jordan Dakin, the CEO of Gripit. And then it was Emma Jones, MBE, the founder of Enterprise Nation. Mike Bandar, founding partner of Turn Partners. Graham Alcott, author and founder of Think Productive. Una Collins, CEO of Potential Plus International. Paul Faulkner, CEO of the Greater Birmingham Chamber of Commerce. Deepak Taylor, founder of latestfreestuff.co.uk. Phil Jupitus, comedian and poet. Jeremy Walker, technology entrepreneur. Charlotte Hodson, co-founder of Awesome Merch. Andy Street, CBE, mayor of the West Midlands. Benjamin Banks, founder of SBD Apparel. Katrina Owen, ecosystem engineer at GitHub. Carrie Green, founder of the Female Entrepreneur Association. And then the final and 17th guest was Sarah Davis, founder of Crafters Companion.
Fantastic. So let's dig in straight away to the first trend, which was some kind of a change or disruption for the guest at some point during their childhood.
The first one I want to talk about here is Paul Faulkner. So Paul is the CEO of the Greater Birmingham Chamber of Commerce, and he also used to be the CEO of Aston Villa Football Club. What was fascinating about Paul's episode is that by the time he was 13, he was starting his sixth school. Paul's dad worked in newspapers. His dad's role moved a lot. And so Paul was just used to always being the new kid at each of the schools that he went to. So in his episode, while he said it wasn't really comfortable, at the same time, he just learned to deal with it. He got so used to it because it happened so many times. And one of his tactics for fitting in was to just join a sports team and start making new friends through that. And then another notable example in this category is Jordan Dakin. So Jordan is the founder and CEO of Gripit Fixings. And when he was very young, his parents split up. And then when he was about 13, his dad moved to Sierra Leone for work. Jordan also around that time got kicked out of school. So, I mean, that's a lot of disruption so far. And what he ended up doing is having to be tutored by lots of different tutors and setting up a business to organize those tutors. Another really good example for the change or disruption theme is Carrie Green, who is the CEO and founder of the Female Entrepreneur Association. Carrie said that she used to really play up in school, and what that meant was that she ended up changing schools. So she went to a different one than her three siblings, and she almost felt like she was treated differently and on a different path. And maybe that led to her feeling like she had to prove herself to the people who dismissed her. So that's a really good example of change or disruption. But also, I think being underestimated could end up being a real powerful tool for unlocking someone's potential.
Yeah, thanks for that. I think it's really interesting that change or disruption came up in those three guests, but also several of the others. I think change and disruption can be seen as an unsettling thing for kids. But really, if you think about it, that ability to adapt to new scenarios is something that's really, really important for entrepreneurs and successful people as well. So I can see why that's come up quite a lot.
I think with each of those examples as well, they've really just been thrown into the deep end and they've just had to work out how to adapt and how to survive, which is probably very similar to what many entrepreneurs have to do with changing economic times and uncertainty and everything else that they have to deal with.
Absolutely. And so we'll move on to the second trend that we discovered, which was what we've called big wide world.
What we mean by this is some kind of awareness that the world is a big place. So one of the examples here is Emma Jones, MBE, who was the fourth guest. She attended an international school. She actually got a scholarship to Concord College, which was a UK-based international school. And it was here that she met loads of people from all different countries. And she just basically experienced people who had completely different backgrounds to her. This led to her incorporating the Japanese language into her law degree when she started university. Emma then went on to move to Japan and she actually started her first business there. So just how powerful is that? The fact that someone not only is aware of a different country, but then starts discovering more about it and then actually sets up their own first business there. Like, so many people don't even set up a business in their own country, let alone moving to a whole different place and doing it there.
That's really interesting. But it also goes for issues closer to home as well, which is something that came out in Andy Street's podcast.
So he went to a really good school, actually, and he said that constantly the staff at his school would remind the pupils how lucky they were and the fact that there were other people, even in the neighbouring districts of the school, who just weren't so lucky. And Andy described this as really sticking with him. So when he started work, he used to volunteer for a charity, and the charity had a very simple model of taking kids who otherwise wouldn't be able to go away on holiday. And in Andy's episode, he said he remembered taking groups to Wales so that they could see the sea for the first time. So not only was Andy becoming aware of the world in his, through his education and through him growing up, but he was also becoming aware of how lucky that he was to be able to see the world. And that created an awareness which then served him throughout his career. Another really good example of the big wide world theme was Katrina Owen. She's an ecosystem engineer at GitHub. And Katrina's big wide world example was perhaps the most varied of all the guests. She moved countries a lot as a child. She described her parents as hippies. She saw absolutely loads of the world at an early age and got involved in her dad's work in different countries. She also joined the circus at some point growing up. But Katrina just has so many examples of understanding different cultures and how different people lived and beginning to understand her place within that. Another example of Big Wide World is episode 7, where we interviewed Una Collins, the CEO of Potential Plus International. Una remembers that she was really encouraged to go and see the world, get out there, go and explore, go and make your own journey. She also remembers very distinctly that her older brothers, Shane and Michael, would travel the world, would meet different people from Australia and different places. And so Una, who was at home at the time, would remember there'd be a knock at the door and it'd be someone who said, "Oh, Shane said you could put us up for the night." And so they'd have all these travellers from random different places just staying on their couch, like couch surfing. And so she would talk to them and she would find out about where they were from and what their background was. So I think that's a really nice example of the world coming to you, even in your living room. And then there's also Paul Faulkner in this example. His dad, who worked in newspapers, used to come back from work every day with a pile of newspapers underneath his arm, and he would put them out over the kitchen table and Paul would just have a look at all of them. And he remembers being very interested in the sports section, but really interested in the international news section. So you can imagine how powerful this is. As a small child, you're reading about all these business things and news and opportunities that are going on in lots of different countries. How that would build up a really good picture of what could be achieved in the big wide world.
Yeah, I think having an awareness of the things that are going on, not just around the whole world, but even with people just on a different street in the same city, is really important, because if you don't have that exposure or awareness, you can get a little bit tunnel visioned and your world can be so insular that you don't really know what else is available to you, whether it's career wise or starting a new business. And I think that can really open someone's eyes. And another thing is this worldliness just gives you a sense of perspective on where you are and who you are in this society, in this ecosystem. And I'm not surprised that so many of our guests had this sense of that there was something bigger than them that they could aspire to.
It would give you such a sense of perspective. And maybe having that worldly awareness from a young age might help you let go of smaller things. So would it really matter if your sister was borrowing your favourite dress if you knew the global issues that were being fought in different countries? You might just have a really, really nice sense of perspective and maybe bigger ambition as well, or just the potential to dream bigger.
Okay, let's move on to the third trend that we identified. And this is a really interesting one. And this is the experience of work during childhood. So a really great story that we have is from the podcast episode that featured Graham Allcott.
Yes, definitely. Graham is the CEO of Think Productive, and he has written books. He's actually a best-selling author on many books, including Productivity Ninja. So it's all about productivity. And when Graham was growing up, he started a business washing cars for his neighbours with a friend. So they'd go door to door. They would say, hey, I'm going to wash a car for you. It's going to be this much. And then they would get to work with their sponges and buckets and things. Graham quite quickly worked out that he could earn more money in a day if he washed more cars. Makes sense, right? But so him and his friends set about washing the cars really, really, really quickly. They did a really good job, but they did it really quickly. And then they went to collect the money, and the person who was their customer was like, hang on a minute, you've only spent 10 minutes on that. It can't possibly be clean. Now, Graham knew this car was clean, but he still wanted to be paid for it. So eventually what he worked out is that he needed to go at the end of the day to collect the money so that the customer didn't realize how long he spent washing the car, because he knew he could do a very good job in a very short time, which perhaps has led to all his work on productivity. But it sounded like Graham's car washing business was actually quite successful because he operated it in that way with efficiency at its heart.
I think that's such a great story. And I think someone like Graham will have learned so many lessons from that. And I think many of the guests that we had also did start businesses when they were younger. You can see even from that story that there's so much to be learned moving forward.
So one example of experience of work where it wasn't necessarily their business, but they definitely were immersed in someone else's business, was Craig Donaldson, the former CEO of Metro Bank. Craig grew up in a pub. So he grew up in the northeast of England. His mom and dad ran the pub. And what I got from his episode was just his experience of the cause and effect of work and having to solve problems for his customers. So he realized very quickly that the nicer you were to people, the nicer they were back, the more they wanted to come back, the more they bought in the pub, and the more the business was a success. And then small problems like, if a certain beer ran out, no one would buy it, so you wouldn't make any money. So he had to go and make sure that everything was stocked, that everything was working as it should. So he developed a real problem-solving mindset within that experience of growing up in a pub. And then the last person we interviewed in season one, Sarah Davis MBE, who is the owner of and the founder of Crafter's Companion and one of the youngest dragons on Dragon's Den, she was very heavily involved in her family business to the extent that she thought that she would take it over one day. So Sarah went away to university, and within her degree, she did a year in industry at a crafts company. And she described this as opening her eyes to a whole new world. She hadn't even considered craft businesses before. And working within a craft company in that year meant that she started coming up with her own ideas of products that she could make. She went back to university thinking, I'm going to join that craft company after I leave. Went back to them at the end of uni with all her ideas, and they weren't interested. So she thought, well, hang on, these are good ideas. And then what she decided to do was to set up her own business, taking her own ideas forward, because having the experience of working in that company, she knew that she was onto something, even if other people were going to dismiss her. And then another example of experience of work was with Jessica Wheeler, the principal of Elmhurst Dance School, one of the most prestigious dance schools in the country and maybe the world as well. Jessica was a dancer pretty much her whole childhood. And she remembers that her and her sister used to dance together. And also they used to give performances for their parents and their parents' friends. And they would go around selling tickets to these performances. So you can imagine how that went down. But she said that they were all very nice. They all got involved. They used to sell tickets. They'd all sit around in their living room. And then her and her sister would do performances for them. But having that experience of being an entertainer and actually selling tickets would have put her in real good stead for the future.
Absolutely. And another great example of this was Emma Jones, who got involved in her mum's hospitality business along with her brother. And I think as young as maybe 9 or 10 years old, she was working the till, stood on a box, either her or her brother anyway, helping her mum's business, and had firsthand experience of pretty much every single element of that business, which has obviously shaped her understanding of commerce for the rest of her life.
Yes. And Emma also had dinner table conversations about business, which just meant that talking about business and talking about running one just became so normal to her. The story of Phil Jupiter's is a little bit different. You might know Phil. He was one of the team captains on the show Nevermind the Buzzcocks for a very long time, maybe 19 years, and has done various different things in comedy and poetry. So he used to write poems and verses and short funny songs when he was growing up. But his pivotal moment and his first, one of his first experiences of the world of work and how he could fit within it came when he got dragged along to an open mic night. So he remembers it was quite a big event. There were 20 or so different performers. They were doing sketches and poems and songs. And he just remembered experiencing those performers and just thinking, hang on, my poems are better than this. I can deliver better than that. And then just realizing, oh, wow, I could do this. And that was what set off his whole career in comedy.
Yes, there's a lot of examples there. And I think virtually every single one of our guests had some exposure to the world of work, either firsthand when they set up some kind of venture or working in a business or seeing someone else close to them starting a business. It seems to have just given them a degree of commercial awareness at a young age compared with others who maybe didn't have that exposure, who've gone through the traditional education system, gone through university, and then that first graduate job is their real first experience of the world of work. And I think seeing how businesses work, just simple supply and demand lessons, simple customer care lessons, has a real impact on understanding how potential business that they started could run.
And I don't think that being so commercially aware from such a young age would ever have taken someone's childhood away from them. It would have just meant that their understanding of how the world worked and how businesses worked was just woven into all their experiences, which probably just meant that when they were 16, 17, 18 and thinking about their future career, that maybe starting a business was an option, whereas it might not have been otherwise.
Yeah, you never got the impression that any of the guests were forced into child labor or it was a real conscious effort by a parent or member of the family that said, look, this is what you're going to do. It was just seen as a point of interest, really, and it was just the done thing. And maybe that helps the would-be entrepreneur see that starting a business isn't just work separate to life or downtime, pleasure time, for example, that it's all interwoven and it's almost a lifestyle. So let's move on to the fourth trend, which is that guests were really inquisitive or they had a desire to learn whilst growing up.
One of my favourite examples of this theme was episode number 5, which was Mike Bandar, who is the co-CEO of Turn Partners. So Mike remembered that he would love his toys and his games and everything so much that he would constantly take them apart just to see how they worked. And he said that sometimes he would manage to put them back together and sometimes he really wouldn't manage and that would be the end of that toy. He also remembers being that annoying little brother who just always asked why. But why do we have to do that? But why is that happening? He just wanted to know how everything worked and he just had this insatiable desire just to understand the different cogs in everything. One of the stories that Mike told that I love is that he came up with lots of different ideas on what different companies could do. So he sent off his ideas to different companies. So maybe ideas for different marketing things or different things they could say in their advertising or different products they could make. He said that his parents were very supportive of him doing this. But in particular, he sent his ideas for marketing off to Tate & Lyle, the sugar company. And they got back to him and they invited him down and they sent him some stuff and he got to do like a tour of their factories. And that just probably helped him be even more inquisitive in the future because he realized what it could lead to if he was just a little bit cheeky.
Yeah, that's a fantastic episode. I really enjoyed your conversation with Mike. He's someone that we both know really well and he's a really fantastic entrepreneur. Someone else that falls into this category as well is Deepak Taylor, who learned very quickly that he could make some money out of eBay. But I'll let Jodie explain more about that.
So Deepak used to get things around the house. Just things lying. He described them as just things lying around the house. And he used to list them on eBay. I think he started off with things that didn't matter to anyone and were maybe going in a charity bag anyway. And then he started just listing his mom's possessions on eBay. And then at first she was a bit like, what? And then after that, she was just fascinated with how much they could receive because she just thought it was just bits of rubbish. So Deepak's experience of selling household items on eBay then led to him purchasing items to sell on eBay, which then led into a whole eBay empire, which he ran. And then that focus on saving money and thrift and being frugal led to him setting up his website, Latest Free Stuff, and also writing a best-selling, I believe, book called How to Live for Free. And then Katrina Owen as well was a good example of just being really inquisitive and having this desire to learn. Katrina talked about the decision-making framework that she had growing up, which was about an opportunity being presented to you and then you deciding whether to take it or not to take it, and her pretty much going through life with this decision-making framework and then even questioning whether that was the right decision-making framework to use. But she remembers seeing specific opportunities and being absolutely fascinated with them. So she had a Linux operating system. She learned how to code and she started developing different things using that and running different commands and lots of techie stuff. But basically being like immersed in this world of coding and developing stuff and making things happen. And I don't think anyone can get immersed in coding without having an innate desire to learn, because first of all, you have to learn the language and then you have to stick with it after that.
Absolutely. And I think Jordan Dakin fits into this category quite well as well.
Jordan Dakin's story is an ultimate story of resourcefulness. So we talked before about how his parents split up when he was young, his dad moved to Sierra Leone, and then Jordan moved in with his grandparents when he was about 13. So the story goes that he was moving into, I think it was the garage, he was setting up his bedroom there, and they wanted to hang some stuff on the walls. I think they wanted to hang a TV on the wall. And they were trying to use all these different fixings to put it up, and they just kept breaking. And so him and his granddad were trying to fashion different things from around the house to mean that they could hang this TV on the wall. And what they eventually came up with was a device that is now Grip It, which is now his £20 million business. And this is just through growing up around engineers and just having that mindset of, well, I can find something to solve this problem, and then carrying on going until he invented the solution to the problem he was trying to solve.
Yeah, I think it really makes sense that this trend shone through in a number of the guests that we had, because I think entrepreneurs are continually learning and they're essentially solving problems. I think really if you were to summarize what an entrepreneur did is they're kind of a professional problem solver, whether that's for their customers or within their business. They're continually doing that. So I think that's an unsurprising trend. I think they also displayed a genuine interest in what they were doing. And I think business people do really have an interest in what they're trying to achieve through their business. And so maybe that all starts there. And I think there are ways that we can cultivate that interest in kids as well.
Yeah, so one of the examples that we had actually sent in to Clever Tykes by a parent was about how to cultivate your kids' interests and make sure that they develop them into deeper interests. The guy that sent in the example, I think he was American, and he was saying that if your kid's interested in dinosaurs, you double down on dinosaurs. And so you get them the figurines, you get them the calendar, you take them to the dinosaur museum, like you really go to town on developing this interest so that they get such a deep, wide, varied understanding of that topic. And then that translates into them picking that up with other areas as well. So they just learn how to be inquisitive, and they learn that if they do want to learn more, it is possible that they can.
Absolutely. The fifth trend that we came across was this sense of independence, or at least being given independence from an early age. And I think the best example of that to start with is Una's.
Una's story is a really good example of independence, because she grew up in a single parent home because her father passed away when she was young. And after that happened, it threw the whole family into a very difficult position where they had to all work out how they could pull together and afford to live. So Una specifically remembers her mom getting them all together and saying, look, guys, we need to sort this out. We need to make a plan. And that's what they set about doing. They worked together to be resourceful and to independently solve this huge, giant family problem that they had. And one thing that Una specifically remembers is that they would go back to her mom with an obstacle or a challenge that they were facing, and she would listen very carefully. And then she would say, okay, well, what are you going to do? And they would answer. And then she would say, and what are you going to do next? And then they would answer. And what I love about Una's story is that now she's a high performance coach. So she works with global business leaders all over the world, probably asking them very similar questions. What are you going to do? What are you going to do next? And a lot of that has come from being almost being trained in how to problem solve and how to be independent from her mom's influence. Jeremy Walker, the technology entrepreneur, was another good example of independence. He was, like Katrina, fascinated with coding and developing and all things technology. And so he learned how to very diligently program from a very young age. And what was interesting about Jez's story is that he grew up in a very religious family and they were not allowed electricity on Sundays. So as you can imagine, when Jez was young, that really frustrated him because he'd have all these ideas for projects and things that he wanted to code and he couldn't do anything on Sundays. So how he got around it was he used to take a notepad, hand write all the code that he wanted to do, think in his head about all the problems he was going to solve and how he was going to do it once he was allowed back at his computer when the electricity would be turned on. And Jez actually said that he sometimes dreams in code and he is just such a thinking coder. And probably that has come from working within such restrictions and having to make his own way of working like that. And I think that links so well to independence because it's like, okay, I've got constraints. This is how I'm going to do this. This is how I'm going to be in control of what I know I want to do as a career.
Yeah, Jeremy Walker's a fascinating character, really. Very good podcast worth listening to. Another one that I was listening to recently, again, was the Andy Street podcast. Even though Andy went to a very good school, had a very safe and secure upbringing, he was very clear several times that he felt independent and that his decisions in life were always made by him and him alone. And that's something that he's very proud of. And I think when you're in a position of leadership like him, ultimately you are going to have to make decisions and sometimes very difficult decisions. And I think being aware that you are the one who's shouldering that burden and also having practice from childhood or certainly young adulthood is going to stand you in good stead to be able to do that.
He was the eldest of three, but Andy always remembers his parents saying to him and his two siblings, you decide what you want to do. They were very clear that it had to be the path that was right for that specific person. And in his podcast episode, he joked that they would have been happy if he'd have been a doctor and not become involved in all that funny political stuff, as they describe it. But nevertheless, he said that they were very supportive in supporting each of the three siblings' very different decisions on how they wanted to live and have their career. And then another example of independence came from Jessica Wheeler, the principal of Elmhurst Dance School. So she remembers when she was growing up, really loving her dance lessons and being a dancer. She recalls the other dancers being absolutely tunnel vision focused on their dance and nothing else. But Jessica knew, and perhaps her parents had put this thought in her, but Jessica knew that her studies were also important. And she knew that she had to always have a plan B, because she didn't want to be completely reliant on a dance career, because she was maybe aware that the percentage of dancers who make it big or something like that. But either way, she wanted to have a backup plan. So that led to her really focusing on her studies. And then it meant that when she did have an injury from dance and she couldn't continue as a dancer, she could turn her knowledge of dance and her studies into being a teacher, which led to her being a head teacher, a principal. She has this wonderful phrase where within her school, she's trying to create thinking dancers. So not just dancers that are exceptional at the dancing, but not anything else. She's trying to create the ones who are commercially aware and can look for opportunities and can assess themselves and work out where they need to improve. And I really love this idea of thinking dancers because it does lead to independence because you're not reliant on this one area of expertise.
Yeah, and I think to finish this piece on independence, we should revisit one of the most amusing podcasts you did, which was with Phil Jupitus, who I think was, well, clearly is a kind of maverick character, but has shown independence throughout his career.
Phil was a really funny story because he's probably the most famous of all the people we interviewed. But when he was growing up, he said he was completely left to his own devices. It was pretty much do what you want, just don't get into trouble. And that meant that he developed like a sure why not attitude. So he remembers that one of the first things he ever wanted to be, like his first career aspiration, was that he wanted to be a checkout operator in co-op. So he saw people doing it. It looked like an all right job. And he thought, yeah, why not? That's what I could do. And that is the attitude that he carried with him throughout his whole career. If you look him up on Wikipedia, or if you listen to the podcast episode, it's eclectic. It's so varied. He's been the team captain on Nevermind the Buzzcocks. He's voiced animals for cartoons, and he's done all sorts of weird and wonderful things. But they have all been based on this sure why not attitude. Just this, it sounds fun, it sounds different, I might enjoy it, who knows what could happen, sure why not. And even on the podcast episode that I did with Phil, he applied that thinking. So I met him first on a Radio 4 show that we both did. The theme of the show was actually boredom. And he was talking about how it's a problem that no one's bored anymore. And he was asking my opinion on it. And afterwards, I spent ages writing him an email to invite him to be a guest on my podcast. And the email was really long. It was all like, it was all like why I thought it was a really good idea and why the listeners would love his story. And to answer my super long email, I got three words back from him. Sure, why not?
That's great. And I think independence is so important for entrepreneurs, because entrepreneurs have to take responsibility and the buck stops with them. And it's not just entrepreneurs. It's also the likes of Andy Street and Phil Jupitus, who have important jobs, for want of maybe a better word.
I love with all the independence examples that this independence was encouraged by parents or by teachers. It was like, yeah, sure, you know the answer. I'll just leave you to get on with it. And that led to people thinking, well, yeah, maybe I can just get on with it. Maybe I can. And that gave them the confidence to do so.
Yeah. And I think having that as a child, so that it's second nature as an adult, is a real advantage for people that have grown up with that, as opposed to it being the first time that you've encountered independence being when you've moved out of home for the first time, or you're venturing into that first job as a 20 something.
And maybe Jessica's thinking dancer and Jeremy Walker's thinking coder, the goal is to be a thinking everything, because then you don't end up meandering through the conveyor belt of education and career, just doing what's expected of you. But you actually think about every single stage. And I think the more that we can instill that in people as young as possible, the better their future might be.
Yeah, certainly the guests pulled this out themselves, but it's something that we should bear in mind as educators or parents, is that essentially we need to trust children to get on with whatever they're doing and believe that they will find a solution or busy themselves, whatever we're trusting them with. We have to give them that autonomy at some point so that they learn that they can be masters of their destiny, master of their time. Okay, so the sixth and final trend is role models. Now, this is probably the one that we most anticipated being a connection amongst our groups. Of course, the Clever Tyke series was written based on the fact that entrepreneurs generally have role models either in their family or close to them growing up. And we're going to start this one with the example of Ben Banks.
Ben Banks is a fascinating character. He is the CEO of SBD Apparel, which is a performance sportswear brand. They create sports apparel that is worn by some of the best sports people in the world, across strength-based sports mainly. So just to have some background on Ben, is that he was very much a straight A student throughout school. He was diligent, he was conscientious, he did amazingly in school and in uni and at all his grades. Ben's main role models were his parents, and he saw them running a business as he was growing up. They used to make cabinets. And what he remembers and why they became such big role models is that they had a really high attention to detail in everything that they did. So he remembers everything that they were making for customers, they would be meticulously checking absolutely every single detail to make sure that everything was perfect. So I don't know if at the time he realized that his parents were role models, but that has massively affected how Ben runs his business now. So SBD, they focus on quality. Every single one of their products goes through something like 16 checks before it reaches a customer. They are... Ben is most likely to say, let me just check that again, and least likely to say, that'll do. And that's from just seeing that happen and believing that that's just the normal way to operate. And then Sarah Davis was someone else who had a very strong role model growing up. She described her dad as an entrepreneur in the truest sense of the word. She remembers that he was always coming up with ideas for different businesses. He actually created a business that her mom and aunt ran. So you might remember that Sarah created a business based on some ideas that she came up with during her year in industry that they didn't want to take forward. So she decided to take them forward. And this ended up with her leaving university with a business turning over £500,000, which she said at the time was bigger than the family business. So she remembers having this business that she'd made a success even while she was at university, leaving uni, going back to her family home. And her dad said, okay, I guess we're doing crafts then, pet, because he's from the northeast of England. And that's what he said. And she was like, well, yeah, definitely. And then that's the business that she rolled with that then turned into an absolutely huge company, which then led to all sorts of opportunities for her, including being a dragon on Dragon's Den. And I just love that her dad just had it's kind of like a Phil Jupitus, like a sure, why not attitude? Like, you've built a business doing crafts. That's what we're going to do then. And having a role model like her dad that she knew was just going to support her in everything that she did was probably a big factor that led to her creating such a successful business in the first place.
Someone else that had a really powerful parental role model was Carrie Green.
Carrie's role model was also her dad. So when she was younger, she remembers that her dad was in business. She knew that he was doing his own thing. She knew that he was very busy working on different things. But she also describes him as her biggest champion. So not only was he her biggest champion in things like playing the clarinet and making sure that she practiced every day, but not making sure that she practiced every day by telling her she had to, making sure she practiced every day by inspiring her to do so. And it was that inspiration that was the biggest thing that he wanted to actually instill in her. So Carrie remembers when she was younger that her dad sat her down in front of a Jim Rohn video and said, watch this. And Carrie just thought, who is this man? What's going on? Why am I watching this? But actually the video was all about dreaming big and how to create an amazing mindset to set yourself up for success and how to become intentional about creating success. She said she remembers her dad bought her a book on cosmic ordering and just so much stuff that meant that she understood the power of the mind. And now she has a global membership organization with a network of over 1 million female entrepreneurs, and she's helping them create a mindset in order to succeed. So you can see how amazingly that story has gone from a role model who believes in something to him teaching his daughter exactly how to do it too, to her massively rolling with it and turning it into such success for herself.
Absolutely. And Craig Donaldson's another one who had very strong parental role models. He grew up in the pub, which his parents own and ran. And I remember him saying that his parents' work ethic really rubbed off on him. He saw them getting up early, working late. They worked slightly different shifts, his mum and his dad, but he saw them working really, really hard, doing whatever was required in the pub, but also their attention to the customers as well, that they were really hospitable, friendly, and their emphasis on customer service really, really rubbed off on him. And that's something that he's taken with him through his career.
And then another example that is sort of in role models, we wanted to talk about Charlotte Hodson because she was a fantastic guest. She was the 12th person we interviewed, and her story doesn't at first appear to fit in with many of the themes so far. She's a bit of a different one, but we thought it was interesting to bring up in role models, especially because Charlotte was fairly academic, like a very intelligent, nice, like lovely person. And her role model was introduced to her in the form of her boyfriend at university, who basically bought a badge maker and then set about getting orders for badges. So it seems a bit random, but Charlotte was just bought into this business, like maybe by accident, not necessarily intentionally. So the story goes that they suddenly received an order from a comedian of 80,000 badges, which you might agree is quite a lot of badges to make on a handheld badge machine. So one of Charlotte's first accidental entrepreneur challenges was to work out how to fulfill this order of 80,000 badges. And that's the start of when she got involved in this business of her boyfriend at universities. In Charlotte's story, she wasn't working in the business full time. She had a part-time job in Pizza Express. And she thought, okay, I'll leave university. I'll work for this company for a little while and I'll kind of see what happens. But then 13 years later, she's still very much a huge part of the company and has been absolutely instrumental in growing it to a team of over 100 people across two different continents. So whilst Charlotte's story wasn't, it didn't have the seeds of a budding future entrepreneur, because she had a role model who was such a strong role model, and because she very much was thrown in the deep end of just starting a business, it meant that she was able to make it a massive success without being necessarily conditioned to do so for her childhood. And I think that's probably quite common in some entrepreneurs.
Yeah, and I can certainly relate to that myself. I wouldn't say that I grew up with any role models from an entrepreneurial sense. I had very little exposure to the world of business growing up. And I think the good news there for parents or educators is that you don't necessarily need to have a role model in childhood. As long as all the other pieces are in place, that entrepreneurial potential can be released later on. I think it's just slightly more unusual is the thing that we can draw here. Most of our guests did have a role model as a child, but it is possible if you have a role model later in life to give you that spark to then start a business, as we saw with Charlotte. And I think that's a little bit of the case with Andy Street as well, who didn't necessarily have any business role models growing up, not that he told us anyway, but he did through his line of work at John Lewis.
Andy Street is now the mayor of the West Midlands, but before that, he was the CEO of John Lewis. And his career at John Lewis started a long time ago. I think it was 1986, maybe, on the shop floor. So he worked his way up the whole organisation to the very top. And one of the reasons that he said he was able to do that is that at every stage of his career at John Lewis, he had like an amazing manager who he thought, yes, this person's good. This is how you're a good leader. I can model parts of this person's behavior and I can incorporate that into what I do. And then I can build myself up within this company. One story that Andy told about the interview process was that when he went to John Lewis to be interviewed, he met some really interesting characters and it really sparked his thinking of, wow, I could really fit in here, because he didn't necessarily see himself as someone who was normal or traditional or would fit in with a regular role, but it really made him interested in a career at John Lewis, thinking, yes, these people are like me. So he very much saw his own identity in the people he met.
I think it's great that we've seen so many examples of role models that aren't just within the family. It just shows that someone needs some kind of role model that they can aspire to, that they can see something of themselves in someone else and realize that anything is possible, really. And I think that's why we were so keen to write role models into storybooks for children, because, of course, they get that exposure no matter what their background, what their situation, that they can learn that anything is possible with the right skills and an attitude to solving a problem. So that really brings us to the end of the sixth and final trend. I'm just going to quickly go over all those six again. Firstly, we had a trend of change or disruption during childhood. Secondly, there was some kind of awareness of the big wide world. Thirdly, most of our guests had some kind of experience of work during their childhood. Fourthly, there was some kind of desire to learn or a real enthusiasm about an area of interest. Fifthly, most of our guests had a great sense of independence. And lastly, most of our guests had a role model in one form or another. And I think it's important to note that of all the guests during season one, the majority had around three or four of those traits. None of them had all six. Most had three or four.
I think probably what's important to note is that, so we have interviewed 17 different people who have all found success in very different areas of work. So I think I don't want to ignore the fact that it's a very small sample size, but equally, this is 17 people who were each, by anyone's standards, successful. And happy as well, equally as important. So what we're saying is it's not necessarily that everyone needs to have experience of these different six themes in order to be successful, but you cannot ignore that there were so many trends that were brought out. I remember, I mean, the first episode I recorded was just fascinating. And then the second one, I was like, oh, wow, that's the set. That thing's the same and that thing's similar and that thing's similar. And then as I interviewed each other person, it was so clear the trends that brought them together. And then it's almost like, well, could we reverse engineer this? And could we take someone and give them a, I mean, I'm not saying whip them out of school just so that they get thrown at the deep end at a new school, but some kind of different change so that they learn how to deal with it, give them awareness of the big wide world, talk to them about work or get them involved in something, cultivate their interests and make them inquisitive and help them to develop the whatever they have an interest in, help them with independence and provide them with role models. Could we reverse engineer this to mean that we can use these six themes to set people up for a successful future? And I think we can.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you look at many of these stories, yes, some of these things are circumstantial. And in many of the stories, there was no great intent to create an entrepreneur. But I think as an educator with that goal in mind, there's certainly things that we can take from this and build those characteristics that are so important: creativity, innovation, and resilience. Those are things that we certainly can help children and young adults develop to set them up for success in whatever career that they choose.
So that was all 17 of the Clever Tax podcast episodes, all brought into six key themes. One thing just to mention is that out of all the 17 guests, bar just a few of them, each of them thought that their unique upbringing was normal. So they probably hung out with people in a similar situation to them. They were told stories of people like them, and they just developed this view that they were just living what a normal person lived. But actually, from listening to each of the episodes, we know that that absolutely wasn't true. And I think it's just fascinating that everyone thinks that their own experience is just what everyone else is going through. Please do go back and listen to each of the episodes. I couldn't possibly do them all justice in these short summaries that I've given you here. They're each of them are fascinating episodes. You can visit podcast.clevertykes.com to listen to each of them. We have also started recording series two of the Clever Tax podcast with lots more examples from the field of entrepreneurial education and incorporating some amazing examples of what parents and educators are doing, and also more examples of how people were raised either accidentally or intentionally to be entrepreneurial. So clevertax.com is where you can find everything, is where you can subscribe to our list to make sure that you receive the podcast episodes first. And thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Ben, my co-host.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
See you next time. This episode was brought to you by Clever Tykes Children's Storybooks. If you want to support the podcast and help share our ethos of inspiring, enterprising behaviour, head over to clevertykes.com and order a set of the storybooks to give to a child that you know.